Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking,
the number one reason to invest in a franchise brand is because you are find people who have a vision that you buy into. You respect their leadership. You respect their confidence. You respect where the brand is today, how they got it to that place, and where they want it to go.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story out of nowhere.
Did you know that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself?
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Capital Hacking. I don't know why it makes me laugh every time, Eric, because I watch the mic. You know what it is, Eric? I'm yelling, and I'm trying to yell in a way that you taught me to yell because you're a yeller coach.
Yeah. Is that what I am? I'm happy to be that for you.
But what's the – you said Mariah Carey.
Yes, you always – you know, if you watch The Experts, Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey – I'm dating myself, you know. Yes, it's the microphone technique, and you're doing it perfectly.
So for you folks, the reason we're giggling is because, first of all, we have a great show, which always makes us giggle because it's Capital Hacking and we have to enjoy it. We have to get the job done and enjoy ourselves the whole time, as Eric taught me. But there's an equalizer, and I can see if I'm going to pop it. Anyway, that was a lot of wasted intro. Sorry for that. Hitting on double speed. Today, we do have a guest, though. Her name is Kim Daly, and we're very happy to have her here because she's going to unlock the mystery that is franchising. In case you've ever wondered what franchising could be and what it could look like, we're going to unveil it. We're going to crack the capital hacking code and determine if this could be right for all of us. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you some stories about franchising my own self. But in the meantime, we've got to welcome you to the show, Miss Kim Daly.
Thank you so much for that introduction. Nice to be here.
Nice to be here. And she does the British rollout or whatever, like from stage where her hand is rolling. As a matter of fact, we've been on another show, Kim, with a lovely co-host. And every time we introduce her, because she's a co-host, she waves at the camera. We're like, but they're listening, Kim. They're listening. You got to actually use your voice. They can't see your wave. But I can. So, Kim, it's delightful to meet you. So, Eric always says, what brought you here? What was the bug? Why are you doing franchising? Why not just do a normal 9-to-5 job?
What do you mean? It's not totally obvious that I woke up one day and was like, I can't wait to be a franchise consultant. It's the dream of a lifetime.
Well, no, it's unique. Okay. Yeah, the rest of us do regular jobs.
Mama always told me I'd be a franchise consultant. But the thing is, you've cracked the code because now you're going to teach us how we can be amazing in franchises. So I've always shied away from it and always thought it was a really cool, shiny object to gravitate towards. But yeah, and Josh actually bit the bullet and did it.
I did. Yeah. But look, the whole premise of franchising, and listen, we're going to get into all that. Jeez, Kim, we're not even letting you tell us where you live. Do you have some children? Do you have a fam? What is going on in Kim Daly's life right now? Go ahead. Tell us a little bit about Kim Daly.
I want to see where you were going before I started talking. But all right, if you're asking me to start, I'll start. So I live in the seacoast of southern New Hampshire. We'll start there. And yes, I've been a franchise consultant for 19 years, about 20 years, and I'm only 35 years old.
Exactly. So you started as a kid.
I was a prodigy. Yeah. I am one of America's top franchise consultants. I built the largest franchise consulting business in the history of franchise consulting back in 2012. Smashing records, becoming a legend. And then now I'm, you know, sharing what I've learned in terms of growing my business with other consultants, as well as with my candidates, so that they can take this very simple daily principle and apply them to their own business, the very simple things that I was doing every day that led me to building that very large business. And so it's been an amazing ride. You're right. I did not go to college to become a franchise consultant. No one ever did. But this is absolutely my sweet spot in life. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 24 years old. I've really never really worked for somebody. I worked for a franchise company right out of college because I answered a classified ad in the newspaper. My kids are like, what's a classified ad?
I know. They would never know.
And it was for a telemarketing job. And in college, I had been a telemarketer. So I knew that I had some phone skills. And it ended up being for a franchise consulting company. And after a few days on the job, it was like an 8-week job. I was on my way to med school, by the way. And my whole life was about going to med school. I'm a nutritional biochemist by degree. And the president of the company said, if you give me 1 year, I will make you a very high paid inside salesperson for my company. Of course, my father was like, don't do it. You'll never go back to school. I'm like, Dad, I'm totally going to go back to school. My whole life has been about school. Why are your parents always right? So I started making money. I loved franchising. And what I really loved was the idea of working for myself. Even in that simple job working for that guy, I knew from the first day that I wanted to be on my own. So I broke away, started my own company. And after 5 years of flying all over the country, making it up by the seat of my, you know, flying by the seat of my pants, making it up as I went along, I finally said, you know, I need systems. I need structure. I need support. I want to build something substantial. I turned back to franchising. And that's when I came across this franchise consulting gig. And I've been here ever since I was 29 years old.
So you've really kind of crisscrossed a lot of cool topics there. I mean, obviously you did not go back to med school, it sounds like, right?
I never went to med.
Never did. Even though you were probably a very high, you know, grades, probably had excellent grades if you're biochem. But not only do you do the inside sales track for a while, which we should talk about sales. We always talk about sales whenever we meet top salespeople. But then you decided that you loved franchising. And even in within franchising, you loved the franchise consultancy franchising, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a deep rabbit hole, is it not? It's hard to even follow that hole. So you're saying franchising, but then there's franchising consultancy, and then you can franchise consultancy. Is that right?
Okay, well, so let's
holy macaroni.
So I was a personal trainer in college. So I was a sports nutrition minor. I wanted to go to med school. I wanted to work with athletes. So I decided to get a personal training certification, and I was working in the gym. So I totally identified, like, the best job I ever had prior to this business was helping people change their lives by teaching them how to work out. So when a friend of mine in franchising said to me, hey, there's this company called Franchoice getting started, you'd be amazing at that. And I looked at the characteristics of the role, like helping people change their life. Instead of talking about fitness, we're going to be talking about business, which I just spent the last 5 years trying to figure out how to be successful as a business owner, realizing myself that I needed some systems and support and structure, that being an entrepreneur can be a very lonely place. And so the very reasons I came to look at franchising are, that's what I'm kind of, quote, selling to people every day.
That's a great point. Yeah. So are you a principal in the franchise parent company of the franchising business you're in now?
No, we are independent consultants. I am a 100% self-employed. I am a franchisee of a company called Franchoice.
Okay, so, we have a lot. We don't have so much time because we find that the listeners enjoy pop hit, quick hits. But, all right, so let's dig in. If there's one message you could get across to our audience that is a little surprising to them, meaning they didn't think of it before and you find it to be an epiphany for people, tell us what that is about franchising.
Yes, the number one reason to invest in a franchise brand is because you are find people who have a vision that you buy into. You respect their leadership. You respect their confidence. You respect where the brand is today, how they got it to that place, and where they want it to go. So the number one mistake I find most people who think about franchising are making is that they're considering the widget. What does the business do?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, I have to have experience, or worse, I have to be passionate about the product. Right? None of that matters. That stuff doesn't make you money. It doesn't make you money when COVID shuts your doors. What makes you money when COVID shuts your doors is strong leadership, a culture of abundance, people who come together and solve the problem and figure out how to turn things around using Zoom or using online platforms, turning memberships into online memberships, ways of adapting and overcoming. That's what makes people money, regardless of what's happening in the world. And that's the number one reason to say yes to a franchise. Not a brand, not a widget, not because you love it, not because your community needs it, not because you think you're going to enjoy it. What you're going to enjoy are the freedom, the control, the passion, the opportunity to build your life alongside these people who you get to know and like and respect.
Very compelling. Very compelling. I mean, Eric, what's going through your head? He's very ponderous over there.
I mean, I know that brick and mortars, you know, there were challenges, right, over the past, you know, 12, 14 months. And a lot of franchises are brick and mortars. But then the ones that succeeded, the ones that figured things out, pivoted, right, and really leaned heavily into the digital space. Can you give us examples of some of those franchises? I don't know if you're allowed to say names or you want to say names, but you know, who are some of the best case scenarios that figured things out and are continuing to figure it out and gaining a lot of success and traction?
Yeah, excellent question. And before I answer that question, Eric, I just want to say that in my world, the vast majority of franchises do not require real estate. So another myth: people come to me thinking franchising is only food and retail. Executives from corporate America, I don't want to own food and retail. I'm not going to own a franchise. There's so much going on in franchising beyond food and retail. As one of the top franchise consultants in the country, I very rarely ever place anybody into food. Like in 20 years of doing this or 19 years, less than a dozen people in food. They have to beg me, right? And I've never done retail. So people are like, well, what do you do? Well, I love service. For the 19 years that I've been doing this, I've been helping people understand that low fixed costs are the key to you sleeping peacefully at night as a business owner. So that doesn't mean I don't do stuff with brick and mortar, but a brick and mortar where it still has relatively low fixed costs. So now to answer your question, the number one brand that I love to point out, which is shocking to people, that they were able to adapt and even grow and thrive during COVID, are my amazing friends at a company called Exponential Fitness. They are the largest fitness franchisor in the world. They have 8 brands, including Club Pilates and Pure Bar and Yoga 6 and Cycle Bar and many other brands. During the shutdown, they had just piloted a digital workout, like a Peloton, a virtual workout. And the timing of that was like unbelievable for them. Now, when all the other mom and pop clubs closed, those people were looking for a virtual workout as well. And Exponential Fitness became the answer. Sometimes at the end of the day, a franchisee, it's still your business to make or break. And not every franchisee follows or buys into the leadership.
I believe that. I mean, you know what I found is the only other challenge. So you're saying it's not about what widget it is and whatever, and you're very pro low overhead. Let's talk about the resale though. So you build this business, it's widget, it's whatever the name of the business is, and it's been 5 years and you've done well, but you're ready to sell it. What is the typical process to sell a franchise business?
I love that question, Josh. And I coach all of my candidates from the beginning to have a vision to sell your business. And here's why. Because if you go in thinking this has to be the thing that I do for the next 15 years, right? It's too weighty of a decision. Like it's paralyzing to people, right? That you're going to, when you've never owned a business. And so here's the thing. If you set yourself up from the beginning that I'm going to build this and sell it in 5 to 7 years, and you get to 5 to 7 years and say, you know what, I'm pretty happy, I'm going to keep doing it, then it's a win, right? But if you get to 5 or 7 years and say, you know what, I've taken on these challenges long enough, I'm over it, I'm ready to sell, you still feel like it's a win. And I'm just setting people up to win, right? It's all about the mindset. Now, if you've taken, let's say you've taken $150,000 and invested in some, you know, service-based business. And let's say that you've built it over the 6 or 7 years to $3 million in top line revenue. And let's be super conservative and say that you're netting 10%. So you're taking home 300 grand. And let's say that you're in a trending space like senior care or something that's evergreen, right? That's long-term sustainable. and somebody would come along and pay you a 3 or 4 multiple of your $300,000 to go away, like $1 million, $1.2 million, why would any of you take the exit, right? Like, people don't think about the value of the asset that they're building and how much that could be worth to the buyer that's out there only looking to walk into existing revenue.
Yeah, no, that's a very powerful point. Yeah, because they can usually, and what are you seeing? Who are the typical buyers of these properties?
Oh, I mean, I get first time, you know, corporate America, 50 years old, downsized, I don't want to go back. I get that guy or gal all the time. But I also do a fair amount with pretty sophisticated investors that have been invested in real estate syndication or flips or, and they're looking for another tangible asset. And they meet me somewhere along the line through a podcast or referral. And I may be their first foray into franchising, but there are franchises that look and feel and act almost like a passive real estate investment. So I want to be careful when I say that, not misleading. A business can't be fully passive, but in our industry, we say semi-absent toward almost absent, you know, 5 to 10 hours a week of an owner overseeing, working on it rather than in it, overseeing a manager who works in it. There are a class of businesses that allow that mentality. So these investors can have be CEOs of companies, can have other investments, and cannot be tied down or enslaved to, you know, their franchise business. And that also then makes it a lot more scalable quickly, right? Because if no one location or, you know, the business doesn't require the owner, they can come in with a bigger vision for building out 3 stores or 5 territories and have that vision where they're focused on the scale, because the wealth will always be created through the scale.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, Eric, you and I have talked a lot about buying businesses on this show and how perhaps it's superior than starting from scratch. Now, with a franchise, let's break it down. Let's use a generic franchise. Let's use your model of $150,000. Is bought to purchase a service-based business. Now, the service-based business typically comes with a prototype business model and a sales process or whatever. In that $150,000, there's not usually going to be pieces of equipment, is there? So with that $150,000, is that the down payment on a bigger purchase price, or is that the price and you can get debt on that in your typical model?
No, yeah, there's funding available. So it depends. Like in a conversation like this, I don't want to be misleading to anybody, nor am I like the financial expert. I certainly know enough to like walk people down the path gently, but I always refer people to my finance friends who all they do is finance franchise businesses.
Oh, okay.
So the number one way that people end up financing franchise businesses is with what's called the ROBS program, or the rollover for business startup, which is a way for you to use a portion or all of your 401k without creating a taxable event.
Wow, I've never heard of this. This is new. Can you slow down and just tell us what you understand about that program? That'll be good enough. It'll be an intro course. We've never heard of this.
Okay. And you can look it up, the rollover for business startups. So it's a way for you to, if you have more than $50,000 in a 401k that is not tied to your current employer. So if you've been severed or it's, and even there's an, not a Roth, IRA, but a qualified retirement plans account, you can use this money for the purposes of starting a business without creating a taxable event. You're 100% qualified. It takes about 3 weeks to have your money. There's no interest rate on the quote loan to your company. And there's no time commitment in which to pay the money back. So a lot of people think I'm going to use somebody else's money until they say, yeah, well, if I have that bank loan, then the bank gets paid back first. So that prolongs when I can cash flow. Well, if I'm trying to pay my mortgage from the business sooner than later, it would be better for me to then use my own money through my 401k. And that way, when the profits start coming from the business, I don't have to pay that bank loan. Now, you will put your money back into the 401k sometime when you are making enough that then there's extra to put back. Now, here's the extra bonus of this little program. So let's say that your 401k plan is still open. You haven't put all the money back. And let's say that you do go to exit with a sales strategy and you sell your business for $1 million. You can put the profits from the sale of the business back into the 401k and avoid paying capital gains.
You're on the right show, Kim. Wow. Yeah. That's like a mic drop
exactly.
Right there. That's so much. That is so good. I'm so inspired by this, Josh. Like, so let's walk down the path for our listeners who are like, man, this might be for me, you know? So say, you know, we have we play a lot in the self-directed IRA space. A lot of our investors come in, right? And they use that vehicle in order to jump in with us, you know, solo 401ks, what have you. So I get it. Like your avatar, corporate America execs who are either still employed or have just access to massive retirement capital that they can put into a project like this with very minimal effort. You know, from the way it sounds. So what does it sound like? Someone comes into your fold. They say, hey, Kim, I'm really interested. Do you work one-on-one or with your team to say, let's analyze your goals, your vision, and your dreams, and then I'll come back to you with a bunch of options that really may fit the bill for you. And then they decide. And then what are the steps after?
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. People come to me and say, I want to own a business. I don't know what's the right one. I don't know what I can afford. I don't, you know, I only know what's out there. You help me. So I work with them and their spouse, if they have one, or their business partner, and we outline their vision and their goals and the characteristics of the business that are going to get them out of bed and get them motivated to be involved to whatever level they want to be involved, the kind of people they want to hire and create jobs for and leave their business in the hands of. So we spend about an hour to 2 hours getting all of these characteristics outlined. I break away, do the research. I come back with a condensed list of companies that have territories open in the area where they want their business to be that match these key criteria. Most of my matching people are like, is it some database? I'm like, no. Most of my matching after 19 years is based on relationship. It's more subjective than objective. Like two consultants may come up with two completely different lists of opportunities. But the idea is that I am using my expertise, my knowledge of who's who, what's what in the industry, who's growing, the kind of validation their current franchisees have. Are they happy? You know, how easy is it to get funded for that particular business compared to the competitor in the space? I know all of this information and it's all for free. I don't charge my candidates any money. I get paid like a recruiter by the franchisors. So once we have our select group of 3 to 5 companies, then I don't just like leave you to your own, you know, due diligence. Because a lot of people don't know, like, what are the questions and who should I be talking to and how do I get past my fear? Like, that's a big part of what I do, right? Whatever the big manly man wants to call it, because he won't call it fear. But everybody has some measure of, am I really going to do this? Does this make sense? And they start getting too analytical. And, you know, no one ever invested in a business purely because it was like a logical thing to do. There's some emotional component. There's the word. There's some, you know, kind of inspiring moment that has to happen during the due diligence, whether, again, it's finding a team of guys that you're just like, wow, these people are like, I want to be like them. And you want to be in business with them to learn from them, right? Or whether it's the history of a brand and it just inspires you and you're like, yeah, I want to be a part of where it's going next. But that has to happen during the due diligence. So it's not just like transactional. It's not just reading a franchise disclosure document and, you know, looking at the numbers and building a pro forma and saying, okay, on paper, this makes sense. No one ever invests in a franchise if that's what they do. And this is why I have a job to teach people how to go through about a 4 to 6 week due diligence process. So we move very efficiently. We don't rush. We just go from step to step to step, because I've traveled this path over 1,000 times. I have created almost 1,000 business owners in my 20 years of being a consultant. So it means I probably walked 2,000 or 3,000 people actually down the path, right? So it's a very well-traveled path. If people follow my lead and they're serious, they might not say yes to the business, but they will absolutely learn what they came for and absolutely understand franchising.
I'll parse that a bit there. Okay, so we have some tough questions as well. But to parse what you just said is, if you follow my lead, which you are compensated by the brand that that person ultimately would select. So there's a high probability you may not get paid at all. But because if there's no transaction, you don't get paid, you're saying. But you said, if you follow my lead, you will understand what you came here for. I like that, because they will have gotten behind the curtain a bit. But let's get to it. When these documents are created, I imagine, I have to tell a little quick story, but before I do that, the documents of the franchise, it's called a Uniform Franchise Disclosure Document?
Franchise Disclosure Document. Yep, it used to be called the UFOC, but now it's an FDD. Yep.
FDD. So the FDD, does it, in the FDD, say how much you're compensated as a consultant, or is that different?
I don't think it does.
Okay. No. Are you compensated differently per type of franchise you buy?
Yep. So I'm compensated. So my compensation is agreed to between FranChoice, my parent organization, okay, and the franchisor. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with the candidate.
Gotcha.
And it doesn't impact any fees that they pay. The fee is, you know,
right,
by the franchisor's desire to grow their brand using consultants.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. It's like pulling the lever over at the franchisor business. If we're heavy duty, have to grow by 50 units this year, we might double our incentive to grow this year.
Well, there's that. But more important than that is, when franchisors make the decision to use a consultant to grow versus advertising or trade shows, or they are definitely targeting a specific client. So they can come to FranChoice, they can come to Kim Daly and say, we're looking for these people who live in these markets, right? They can even target the markets who have this much money, because these people have the highest likelihood of success in our business. So rather than investing time with people who, you know, just filled out a form on the internet or had a bad day at work, and, you know, and them not knowing the caliber of the people, the quality, are they serious? Are they really going to even be there when you follow up and call them, versus someone who's invested upfront time with Kim and who Kim has matched, you know, after 20 years of doing this with the highest, you know, probability of success of any franchise consultant, then, you know, my lead is going to, as a candidate, it's a benefit to somebody, because you're going to go to the top, you're going to not work with the junior sales guy who's taking internet leads, right? You're going to go to the director of franchise development or the senior sales consultant, the people who know the most about the opportunity, because they know that Kim Daly only brings the most qualified people to the table. And there are a lot of other consultants who have great, so we build
a
relationship with that franchisor.
No, it's great. And Kim, you, when you say that, I mean, so let's go back to the business of franchising for a minute. The franchisor, what would you say their promise should be to the franchisee? So the person who you're helping hold their hand, what should a franchise give and provide, if you want to call that a valuable franchise?
Okay. So can I tell you what it should not provide? So first, let me say that, you know, a strong franchisor knows that their plan works. But what they don't know is, are you going to work the plan? So what does that plan include? The plan should include, even if it's a pioneering brand, in my opinion, the plan should include proof. Like, even if it's corporate stores, there has to be proof that the marketing, they know their customer avatar. They know the messaging that their customer responds to, where to spend that marketing dollar and how many dollars to spend in order to build a positively cash flowing business. Like, marketing and sales are the number one thing that drive the business, right? They drive revenue. When the marketing is improving, or you have a person that's supposed to be driving sales and they're not a salesperson trying to run that company, the company isn't going to work.
Now, are you talking about the franchisor for a minute there? Or are you talking about each franchisee?
I'm talking about the franchisor in terms of it's their job to provide the marketing. But if you have a business that relies on sales, it's the franchisee that has to wake up and say, I take responsibility and accountability to go drive that activity.
Is there a distinction? We were just on another podcast with a gentleman who's very successful in franchising. Is there a distinction between a franchise that provides you the business and fills your queue and you just go do the work versus... You know, what is that called? Because he works for a business where he just, they're doing all the accounts receivable and they're doing all the lead scheduling. They're even doing the scheduling.
So, I mean, that's everybody's dream. But as the hardcore consultant, I'm going to tell you that if you don't learn to fish, right? If the franchisor teaches you to fish, then you can fish on your own. If they're going to do the fishing for you, you never learn. What happens when their fishing pond dries up? You go blaming them for your lack of success. But owning a business is about owning it. Like, a lot of franchisors love it when I say that. I feel like national accounts or lead generation that's provided solely by the franchisor, it's like giving your new business owners like crack cocaine and they get so addicted to it that they never go out and have to learn on their own how to do it. And what if like you can't produce it forever and then they're going to blame you. Was it really your fault? I guess it is if you set the expectation that you're going to be the lead generator. But of course, that's everybody's dream business. Sales is what drives the world. So that's the thing that most people say to me, I don't want to sell anything. I'm like, well, you don't want to.
Well, are you true like that? Because by the way, that is the key. And that the biggest thing that happened for me in franchising was I learned about sales. And I credit losing a business through franchising as the turning point for my life and really helping me connect the dots. Because I bought a franchise system that didn't have any marketing, sales, and support. They probably gave me a module to watch and do it. But there was no branded marketing. There was no nothing. And I still think that probably was a mistake. Like, I shouldn't have bought it unless I knew they were going to market into my market. I still think they should be providing the marketing up front, because in the end, I built them a nice little business, hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue. And then they ended up reclaiming it because I wasn't keeping up with the royalty or the lease payment. Because we had barely enough profit to pay the boys and the kids, so the people that worked with us. So my point was, every single sale was because of us. Like, their brand had no value. As a matter of fact, that didn't feel right. So I feel like if you're listening to this and you want to buy a franchise, just make sure that the brand will be like supporting you. I love your point though, Kim, that the person who buys it owns it. I love that. That's a phenomenally accurate comment, that if you're going to build a business, whether it be franchise or not, you own sales.
Yeah. And here's why.
Sales are key.
Yeah. Here's why. Not to cut you off, but here's why. Because you're going to look at that disclosure document and their earnings claim. And people make these quick assumptions about, oh, that's all that you can make. Like, that's not worth my time. Or, oh, wow, look how much money you can make. And how quickly can I sign the franchise agreement? And I just teach my candidates, this is faulty thinking. So unless you know what you have to wake up and do every day to create those numbers on a page, an earnings claim means absolutely nothing to you. And unless you know that you have the skill or the desire to learn the skill to put those numbers on a page, it doesn't matter how amazing the earnings claim is, because you're not going to be able to create those numbers. But once you know that you have the skill and you understand what drives top performance from that business, where to focus your time, then the sky's the limit. You can grow a service or sales-driven entity, which is why I prefer them over something with brick and mortar. You can drive that to unlimited earnings. There are people in industries like restoration that have $15 and $20 million companies. Because, you know why? They're not the average Joe. You know why? Because they've owned it. They've figured out how to maximize the gas pedal, and whether that came from training or whether that came from training and then their own figuring it out. I'm not opposed to people having to figure some stuff out in a franchise. It's not all handed to you. The myth out there is that franchising is an instant ATM machine, or that, you know, build it and they will come and I don't have to like put myself out there. Well, if it were that easy, everybody would do it and everybody would be successful.
It sounds like you work with a very specific sort of person, candidates, avatar, whatever we want to call it. You know, they seem very coachable. They seem like, you know, they're types of people that have some level of self-awareness, right? And they want to learn, and they're humble enough to take advice and implement that advice. Have you turned, or do you turn people away if they don't fit, if they seem too bravado, they seem like they'll never make a mistake, and they don't need coaching? I just tell me what franchise and then I'll handle it from here, Kim.
That's such a great question, Eric. Oh my gosh. And I told him that's not a plant. So I should turn people away, but out of the kindness of my heart, if somebody, and I really mean that, like I run my business in a way that I don't need every single person I invest time with to say yes. I mean, you can't do what I do with integrity if that's your mission. So my job is to educate as many people as I can about what franchising is, because even if they end up saying no and I've done great by them, they'll send me a referral and I work for referrals. So there's that. I don't turn people away, but there certainly are people that are just easier to go through the process with, just more fun, you know, because it's, like you said, it's a give and take. Like they're respecting my leadership and they're asking me for help and then they're taking my advice versus asking me for help and then, you know, shutting me down. Now, when it comes to franchisors, it's a little bit different. So franchises, good franchisors are awarding the opportunity to a candidate. So it's not even the candidate's business to buy until they've completed a process that the franchisor has outlined that enables mutual evaluation that culminates in what's called a meet the team day, a confirmation day, a discovery day, just sort of the last step where you get to really get face to face with the executives of the company and kind of get that extra little fairy dust, you know, that the executives kind of sprinkle onto your dream. And that's kind of the high point, the culmination of your logical due diligence and your emotional kind of energy for this opportunity. And then after that discovery day, the franchisor will award to the people that they feel are the most coachable, will fit into their culture, will be people that can take their brand and become great brand ambassadors. And not everybody gets approved. And as many times as I say this in a setup, there are still people that are shocked and angry when they're not approved. But the thing, what you have to do to not be approved, it's like if you're just, you know, you just act like a normal, happy, you know, easygoing, like check your ego at the door a little bit, like you said, and like just be coachable until you've proven yourself, you know, follow the path. You're paying for it. Why walk it? The people that they don't approve are just those people who show up looking for a fight. You know, who show up trying to challenge everything, you know, and the franchisor is just like, we've got 200 franchisees who do it this way. Like, why are you telling us it doesn't work? You know, and believe me, there are people who do that.
I'll tell you what, it's been a really energetic and cool conversation. I think it's been a cool journey. I would love for people to be able to reach back out to you though, Kim. How could they after this podcast?
Fantastic. So thank you for that. I enjoyed talking about what I get very passionate. So my website is thedailycoach.com. And I think we can /capital hacking if you want to attach it.
Nice. That'd be fun.
So you can check me out on the Daily, D-A-L-Y, the Daily Coach, also YouTube and LinkedIn. I have a whole library of franchising videos debunking a lot of the myths that I hit on today and just trying to provide real content and real information. So even the people that I don't meet can kind of know a little bit more about what's up in franchising.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's good. Whoever follows up with you at the Daily Coach is going to have a hell of a lot of fun talking with you and working with you. So I'm sure that'll be fun.
I want to add one thing that I've noticed on your LinkedIn page that I want to recommend to the audience. So if you're a business owner, I highly recommend if you take a lot of phone calls, a lot of coffee, a lot of free 5-minute chats or 15 minutes, and this and the folks in your ecosystem or that want to get into it are asking the same questions, do what Kim did. She created a video that says, these are the top five questions that I get asked all the time. So this way you get all of that time back when people want your time. Hey, Josh, can you have 5 minutes, half an hour? I have questions for you. Hey, I got a video. It's on LinkedIn. Go check that out. And then if you have any more questions, I'm happy to meet with you. So kudos to that. That's one little thing that I noticed. And I was like, this is gold. Just want to share that with our audience.
Yeah, you do have a heck of a great profile there. TheDailyCoach.com. Great to meet you, Kim.
Great to meet you. Thank you.
Wow. Wow. You made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life, and thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week, and we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to, and we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility.